I'd like to say hello and welcome to our show. You're listening to Trigger Happy Memories. We're on WPCA Radio 93.1 Amory, Wisconsin. Or maybe you found us on the computer. It doesn't really matter. Just welcome and thanks for tuning in. My name is Mike Murtha. Sitting next to me, we got Ed Schmidt. And we feature live music and a good story or two along the way. And we welcome a new guest each month. And this month, we have Rick Shevchek. And Rick, besides being a musician, is well known as an author. And we will share some music, some live music, as well as some good stories with Rick Shevchek. So sit back and listen. Tell your friends and neighbors this is small town, hometown, old-fashioned radio, just the way we like it. We hope that you do, too. Hope that we trigger some happy memories and maybe create some new ones. So let's do it. Let's have some fun. Once again, welcome everybody. You're listening to Trigger Happy Memories. We're up in downtown Amory, Wisconsin, WPCA Radio. And Eddie, good to see you. How you doing there?
Doing real good tonight.
That's good. Yes, we had a big time at your birthday party.
Yeah, thanks for coming. That was a great time.
And wow.
A lot of musicians there and
man,
a lot of music. And
there's some people I hadn't seen for quite a while, Sam Boatman and different ones like that. I hate to even start naming.
Yeah, there was
Eric Satterlund, and but there was... Oh, we had fun. A lot of good music.
Great time, yeah.
That was fun. You bet. And Ethan's group was really good.
Yep, the Rattlenecks kicked it off for us for an hour there with the guys that he plays with in Eau Claire and just one of the groups he works with. And
yeah,
it
good
was
stuff.
Great to have them
set
up the equipment and do most of the hard work. And
we took all the credit, right?
Yeah. So that was fun.
Oh, it was fun. And, of course, we got big doings down in Elmwood coming up here, right?
Trigger Happy. It's a big show.
It's a big show. We're at the Elmwood Auditorium on the, I believe it's the 8th of
December.
On
the 8th, yep.
And we'll be in Amory on the 10th here for Uncle Bob's birthday party.
Yep.
Over at the Amory Memory Care. And we're going to try to get everybody in town to come out for that one.
Oh.
And I'll be in Northfield, Minnesota with the guys from the White Sidewalls doing that Christmas party we do every year. And looking forward to that. So I just talked to Hound Dog a little while ago. So I hope he's tuned in here. So, Eddie, we got a real special guest. Again, we've been so fortunate with our guests, but tonight we've got Rick Shevchek from Stillwater, Minnesota. Rick, hello. How you doing?
Great, Mike. Good to be here.
Yes, we're so honored that you took the time to come and share your music and your stories with us. You're from Stillwater, Minnesota. I feel like I kind of know you because I read your book, the one about the birds. Everybody's heard about the bird. And the book is a true story of the 1960s rock and roll in Minnesota. And just to give the listeners a little background on you, you're author of four novels, author of three works of nonfiction. You wrote for the St. Paul Pioneer Press for 25 plus years.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, and you've been involved in music since high school, playing with some bands off and on. You play guitar and sing and... So we're so glad that you're here. So.
Well, it's great to be here. I love what you guys do here. This is what radio still should be.
Well, I know. This is what our boss here, Bob, has told us, that no one's doing this anymore. So it's live, and it's not always correct, but we're here. It's live. I got to tell you a quick story, and we're going to interview you, but I got a call from Jim Bjorkman. I didn't tell you this, Eddie. He's from Sunburst, Montana, one of our faithful listeners of this show. But he heard that you were going to be here, and he read your book out in Montana. So that book is, I'm sure, all over the nation. But he is going to be gone tonight and can't listen to the show. So he said, "Can you get me a copy of it or something?" So anyhow, I just want to share that he's we announced at our last show, so he had heard that and was excited. But Rick, we ask everybody this that's come in is what inspired you to want to play music? Can you think back?
I really can't remember when I didn't love music. I had a little record player when I was a kid, you know, even before I started school. But, you know, I come from a family of musicians. My dad was a big band leader. And in fact, back in the late 30s, when he was just getting out of high school, he and his group out of Duluth, the Silvertones, played on the Normandy ocean liner. They actually worked on the ship and got a passage over to Paris and back. And after he got out of the army, after World War II, he put together a little Dixieland group, and it just got bigger and bigger and bigger until it turned into a 24-man big band.
Oh, wow.
and he led that for years. It was called the Hungry Five Society. If anybody ever went to a, like a wedding up in Duluth, they might have heard that band.
Yeah.
And my brother, older brother, 3 years older, my brother Mark, was a drummer in a group called the Soul Seekers out of Duluth, and they had a couple of big hits in 1967, at least, locally in Duluth, and one of them even scraped onto the KDWB chart for a week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, neat. Well, you've got a lot of history of... It is, when you and I, we talked, we were in Stillwater and had coffee together here a while back, but one thing I was telling you that we ask everybody this, and a lot of times it was, they said, you know, the Beatles inspired us to see them on the Ed Sullivan Show, but... You made a comment, you asked a lot of the people that you interviewed in your book, a lot of them said the song Walk Don't Run.
Right. The guitar players in particular from the early 60s were massively influenced by that record. And what you need to keep in mind is that most of the bands that we remember from the 60s, you know, we're talking about the Underbeats and the Trashmen and the Chancellors, I could keep going on about this, but most of those bands existed before the Beatles came along. They were listening to the same 50s rock and roll that the Beatles were. They were influenced by exactly the same groups. And the one wild card in there, though, was when Walk Don't Run was released in 1960, and some of these bands were maybe doing different styles of rock music. Some of these guys were actually doing some folk music, that kind of thing. But when they heard Walk Don't Run, electric guitar sales really spiked.
Well, I learned it back then. I got to learn this song. It was, I'm sure you did too, Eddie.
Yeah, probably.
Steve did too. But anyhow, we're going to have you sing. We're going to come back to some more stories.
You may regret that, but I'll try.
Oh, I don't think so. We're going to have some fun. You're going to do a little Dave Dudley, isn't it?
Right. Dave cut this song at K-Bank Studio in the Twin Cities, and it was released on a subsidiary of Soma Records.
Oh, okay. Sure. All right. Eddie, you want to kick her off there?
Well, I pulled out of Pittsburgh, rolling down that eastern seaboard. I got my diesel wound up and she's running like never before. There's a speed zone ahead on the right. Well, I don't see a cop inside. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight. I got 10 forward gears and a Georgia overdrive. I'm taking a little white pills and my eyes are open wide. I just passed up a Jimmy and a White. I've been passing everything inside. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight. Well, it seems like a month since I kissed my baby goodbye. I could have a lot of women, but I'm not like some other guy. I could find one to hold me tight, but I can never make believe it's all right. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight. Oh, I wanna say this, take it, Eddie. Now the ICC's been a-checking on down the line. I'm a little overweight and my logbook's way behind.
Oh, but nothing bothers me tonight. I can dodge all the scales all right. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight. Well, my rig is a little old, but that don't mean she's slow. There's a flame from her stack and that smoke's blowing black as coal. My hometown's coming inside. If you think I'm happy, you're right. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight.
All right, very nice, Rick. That sounded good. Yes. This is fun.
That sounded really good, Eddie. nice picking.
I didn't tell you this table is very active, our microphones. So you gotta be careful.
You need a bass drum, just
yeah.
Here.
Yeah. Okay. Did I pound on it?
I just forgot. I usually tell everybody, but okay. I forgot to tell you that. But that was good. That was fun.
Thanks. That was fun.
Yes. In your book, you had some information on Dave Dudley, and it was a picture of him at the Flame Cafe, I believe, with an accordion player, but. This would be prior to his release of 6 Days in a Road. Is that?
Yeah, Dave really bounced around. He recorded for several different labels. None of the songs really got much traction. And he worked as a radio DJ for a while. In fact, he was, I think, bouncing back and forth between performing and his radio work in the Twin Cities. But playing fairly often at the Flame Cafe, sure. Which was it's another place I really wished I'd been able to go to, but it was the country bar in the Twin Cities, yeah. And all of the big country acts came through there. And, of course, they had their house band, which included Jimmy Colvard, mm-hmm. who ended up playing guitar on 6 Days on the Road and then yes. went to Nashville because everybody was so knocked out by how well he played on that.
Yeah.
But one night Dave was loading his equipment outside the Flame, and he was injured by hit-and-run driver.
Mm.
So once he healed up, he took his insurance settlement and decided he was going to make one last stab at a successful recording career. And he brought a bunch of songs in, and one of the last one he cut, it was just kind of handed to him by a buddy of his that said they'd tried it in Nashville and it hadn't really worked, but they thought maybe it was a good fit for Dave.
Sure.
And he said, well, if we got enough time in the studio, we'll give it a try. So they went into K-Bank Studio, which had not really yet quite established itself as a hit factory. But there were country acts that were recording there, and Dave recorded 6 Days on the Road, and Jimmy Colvard came over from the Flame and played the electric guitar lead, and it became a huge hit. Locally, it was successful, ears out of Nashville heard that song, and Dave Dudley's contract was sold to Mercury Records quite sure. quickly after that. And then Dave was on the road ever since. He became a huge country star based on that song.
I think I told you this before. We were fortunate to be his backup band for about 3 years to his last whatever.
Yeah, from 2000 to 2003, I think, before he passed away. We got to do a handful of shows with him a year. That was the neatest thing I ever got to do.
What an honor.
To have him talking to you like you were his leader, Steel Man. It was just nothing like it.
Yeah. And when you think about that voice, how could that have just sort of been unrecognized up in, it's a great song, there's no doubt about it, but he had a sort of a leer to his voice that, you just can't find in anybody anymore. He was really a one-of-a-kind singer.
And he still had that voice right till he died. He said he would do some kind of voice exercises, he told us, but I don't know what that was, but... But I remember...
I think it came a little bodily.
Well, that's true. He did.
Yeah, that's that good old country elixir.
Yes. We'd ask him if he'd care for a drink. I never drink before 5 o'clock. You haven't got a light beer, though. I'd drink one of those. He didn't count that as... That's okay. But, I remember when we were playing with him, like the first time he was on stage, and there was some people in the crowd were watching my brother John and myself, and they said, we never took our eyes off of him. We just stared at him for the entire show as we're playing. Just, that's Dave Dudley. We just, so, but I, he loved to tell us stories, didn't he, Eddie?
Yeah, the stories about him sitting on a hotel room floor eating Fruit Loops with Roger Miller and different weird stuff that it was hard to believe. And then he said more towards the end of his career when the label called him and said, yeah, we think we're going to go with this new guy that we might not have quite as many songs for you now. And I says, who was that new guy? And he says, well, Kenny Rogers or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, but that was... Eddie, why don't you sing a Dave Dudley song? We got lots more stories, but we're going to make sure we squeeze some music in here, too. So here's a song. We actually recorded this song in 2004, I think, wasn't it?
I'm glad you remember.
I think it is, yeah.
It's one called In a Pair of Cowboy Boots. Yeah. All of my life I've been trying to save to get a pair of cowboy boots. 16 years of my life I gave to get a pair of cowboy boots. I'm gonna go where the money's free. Hollywood is a-calling me. Oh, what a great big star I'll be in a pair of cowboy boots. Well, I'm gonna get on a TV show in a pair of cowboy boots. I'm gonna ride in a rodeo in a pair of cowboy boots. I'm gonna get me a leather vest, a gun on my hip and a star in my chest. I'll be the terror of the Golden West in a pair of cowboy boots. Oh, give me a home where the swimming pools roam, where the money grows on trees and the gals don't want to be squeezed. I'm gonna get there if I have to crawl in a pair of cowboy boots. Get in the movies and they know in a pair of cowboy boots. I'm gonna get me a leather vest, a gun on my hip and a star in my chest. I'll be the terror of the Golden West in a pair of cowboy boots. I have to crawl in a pair of cowboy boots. Get in the movies and that ain't all in a pair of cowboy boots. I'm gonna get me a leather vest, a gun on my hip and a star in my chest. I'll be the terror of the Golden West in a pair of cowboy boots. In a pair of cowboy boots. In a pair of cowboy boots.
Well, very good, Eddie.
Thanks.
We haven't done that for a long time.
Yeah.
Do it again.
No.
Go ahead.
Okay, no.
You know, as I was researching Dave Dudley, I was going online and looking for some of the other songs of his that I may not have heard, and I came across that one, and I thought, why is this song as obscure as it is? That is a great, really well-written piece of music, and it's good for his voice, but somebody ought to revive that one, and you guys tried, apparently.
We tried, yeah. Yeah, I didn't go too far, but
well, we still got a couple of six, eight CDs left.
We sold most of them.
Oh, it's sold real big in Deer Park.
Yeah, and I think he wrote that song, Dave Dudley. I'm quite sure.
I can't recall the songwriting credit on it, but it's a very clever song.
Yeah, very nice song. Why don't you sing another song, Rick?
Sure. I will do a Jimmy Buffett song.
Sure.
Speaking of clever songwriters. This is one off of his A1A album back in about 74 or so, before he'd become, you know, the leader of Parrothead Nation.
Mm-hmm.
He was still establishing a reputation for himself, but he was quite a songwriter back then. This is called A Pirate Looks at 40. Mother, mother, ocean, I have heard you call. I wanted to sail upon your water since I was 3 feet tall. You've seen it all. You've seen it all. Watch the man who rode you
switch from sails to steam. In your belly you hold a treasure that few have ever seen. Most of them dreams. Most of them dreams. Yes, I am a pirate, 200 years too late. Now the cannon don't thunder, there's nothing to plunder. I'm an over 40 victim of fate, arriving too late. Arriving too late. I've done a bit of smuggling, I've run my share of grass. Well, I made enough money to buy Miami, but I pissed it away so fast. Never meant to last. Never meant to last. Well, I have been drunk now for over 2 weeks. I passed out and I rallied and I sprung a few leaks. I gotta stop wishing. Gotta go fishing down to rock bottom again with just a few friends. Just a few friends. Younger women, I lived with several a while. Though I ran them away, they come back to stay, cause I can still give them reason to smile. It just takes a while. It just takes a while. Mother, mother ocean, after all the years I've found, my occupational hazard be, my occupation's just not around. I feel like I have drowned. Gonna head uptown. I feel like I have drowned. Gonna head uptown.
That's Rick Shevchuk singing that. Very nice.
Oh, is that sweet with a steel guitar?
Oh,
that
this is fun.
Just lovely, lovely.
We always talk about it. It's just fun to do acoustic like this and just kind of winging it here. Yeah. And it's lots of fun. But Rick, we got to talk a little bit about the Country Day. I'm going to get some great stories.
Sure.
Jim Woodley was the owner, and Margot, his daughter, stepped in here just Bones.
Yeah, that was a treat to meet her before
the
show tonight.
I know it. She had heard that you were going to be in town and just wanted to see you as well, but they're out there listening, so thanks for tuning in. But the Trashmen they played at the Country Day before we did, and I know some of these stories from Uncle Bob, who was the manager there, but that's how the song "The Bird Is the Word" got started at the Country Day.
Absolutely, that was the birthplace. And you know, you got to think back to those years. This is like early 1963, maybe spring. And the Trashmen had just come back from California. They were one of the many bands that were sprouting up in this area, playing you know, a pretty typical set list of 50s rock and roll, doing Jerry Lee Lewis. They were you know, playing old Buddy Holly songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good set list. They were a very good band. Tony Andreessen, the guitar player, you know, could play Johnny B. Goode as well as anybody in
sure.
the area. But they were looking for, you know, something to help them stand out a little bit. And that's why they went to California in the fall of 62, because surf music was starting to develop out there. And they, you know, they heard about it and they wanted to go out and kind of absorb it firsthand. So they bought a bunch of records, saw some bands, came back, and sort of recrafted themselves as a surf band. So by the spring of 63, now you're starting to hear them do Dick Dale kind of songs.
Okay, sure.
But they were playing at Woodley's Country Dam, which they did often, and And Steve Warr, their drummer, was actually, you told me this, and I didn't know that, but he had a job there. He was there basically 5, 6, 7 days a week.
Right.
And sometimes staying.
He lived in the, they call it the dam house.
Yeah, right.
And he was doing yard work and whatever they asked him to do, mm-hmm. you know, moving beer crates in and out, but... But then he'd be doing music on the weekends, of course. But
so one night when the Trashmen weren't playing, he was listening to a group called the Sorensen Brothers that had originated in Wisconsin but had moved out to California and came back to play the Midwest from time to time, stopped at Woodley's Country Dam, and they were playing a medley of two songs that they had heard out in Southern California called The Bird Is the Word and Papa Oo Mau Mau. Both of these songs were written and recorded by a band called the Rivingtons.
Rivingtons,
and
yep.
they were an R&B band. And neither of those records had made any dent in the Twin Cities. Mm. I researched this. I wanted to know if possibly, you know, the guys in the Trashmen might have at least heard the records.
Sure.
They, you know, were modest national hits, maybe, you know, scraping into the top 40 in other markets. But no, they never got any airplay here. But the Sorensen Brothers put the two together, played them as a medley, and when Steve Warr heard that, he thought, boy, that would really fit well with what we're doing
sure.
now. But we'll give it a little twist. So he put this growly voice mm-hmm. onto the thing, and he told the band, he said, listen, we're going to do this song. You know, there's like basically two chord changes in the whole thing. And I'll nod my head and let you know when it's time to, mm-hmm. you know, to change chords. In the middle of it, you know, I'm expecting to be a little wrung out here, so I'm going to signal you that I'm going to have to stop and take a breath, and then we'll pick it up and do the second part of it. So that's exactly, I mean, what you hear on the record is more or less what Steve envisioned when he had the rest of the band play it the first time. They didn't do it at Woodley's. They did it at a place called Chubb's Ballroom.
Okay, yeah.
And Bill Deal happened to be emceeing that night,
sure.
And he was familiar with the band, but when he heard them do Surfin' Bird, he was really impressed. He thought they had something, and so did the crowd. They actually had him do it 4 or 5 more times
okay.
before the night was over.
Yeah.
So finally they ended up recording it at K-Bank Studio, same studio that Dave Dudley cut 6 Days on the Road, and the connection between them was that Dave Dudley had written a couple of songs with George Garrett.
Oh.
George was dabbling in country music, but George also owned a recording studio in the basement of his Nickel Lake record store, and so that's where the Trashmen cut their first version of Surfin' Bird, took it to Bill Deal. Bill said, too long, and actually the quality isn't that good, so you should go over to K-Bank and, mm-hmm. and do it upright. But by that time, George Garrett figured that I'm going to keep an eye on these guys, and when the new version of Surfin' Bird got played on the air as an acetate by Bill Deal, Amos Heilacher, who owned Soma Records, called George Garrett and said, "You know anything about this band?" And he said, "Yeah, they're mine. I'm managing them." And the band knew nothing about that, but George Garrett ended up being their manager.
Yeah, and I went back and read in your book again just to get some of this information, but I thought it was interesting that when it was released the first week, it sold 38,000 copies.
That's correct, yes.
People went crazy. And they recorded 1963 in November. By the end of the month, it was a smash national hit. And then January 25th, 1964, it went nationwide number one.
Well, it was going to go number one. This is sort of the sad story for the Trashmen. They were number four at the end of January, and Bill Deal, who had connections with Billboard magazine, was told by his connections that it would be number one the following week. And this was the same, he told them that the night that they were playing at the Winter Carnival Spectacular at the St. Paul Auditorium, which attracted 20,000 kids that night. And they were the headliners.
Oh.
Janet Dean was on the
yeah.
On the bill, you know, 4 or 5 other national acts, but the Trashmen were the headliners because that song was so big. Well, as it turns out, when the next chart came out, they weren't number one. The Beatles were with
okay.
I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Oh, I was thinking that they bumped the Beatles up, but they
no,
didn't.
No, the Beatles kept okay. them out of number one.
Okay, sure. Well, that's... oh,
them darn Beatles.
Yep.
Yes.
did it again.
They do that to us all the time.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
The
that's right. We had so many songs that were just right there, and, yep. and the Beatles come along,
yeah.
right? But, and I was telling you before, too, that you're... your sources for the Country Dam and for Jim Woodley were so accurate, because Uncle Bob told me the same things that you just said now. He just he remembered all this so well, mm-hmm. and so I you know, you did so well with this book with all of your information.
But, thank you.
Yeah.
And the trash men kept playing at the Country Dam, but I don't think as frequently as they had before Surfin' Bird became a hit, because they were on the road a lot
sure.
after that.
They regrouped again somewhere around, I think, 1980. We were playing in the front room, which wasn't there way back when they were there, but they were in the back room, so we did get to meet those guys after they had regrouped, and nice guys, you know.
Just, oh, terrific. I've treasured my, you know, I would say friendship with those
sure.
guys. They were so good to me when I contacted them cold. They didn't know me, but I told them what I was doing, and you know, they told their story before in magazine stories and that sort of thing, but I wanted to sit down and really get a little behind, you know, just sort of the superficial story
sure.
and really find out what their lives were like before they met each other
sure.
and
yeah.
what it was like when they were in the eye of the storm and then afterwards. So, yeah, they were great. They were just terrific guys.
You know, and Uncle Bob Holmes still is friends with them. He said they are the most down-to-earth people. He's
absolutely. Yep.
He's just very comfortable.
I'm sure they never considered living in Hollywood.
No. But we're going to try a song here, Eddie. We do this song about once a year. It's called. The reason why is it's because it's a Christmas song. We're going to try a little song by Brenda Lee called "Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree." So I'll see if we can get through this. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. Rockin' around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party up. Mistletoe hung where you can see everybody's trying to stop. Rocking around the Christmas tree, let the Christmas spirit ring. Later we'll have some pumpkin pie and do some caroling. You will get a sentimental feeling when you hear voices ringing, let's be jolly at the halls with balls. Everybody
nailed it.
Yeah. I forgot you brought your saxophone.
That well, was it's good. I think I have to grab that to this song.
That was very nice, Eddie. Yes. Now, when they replay this show in July, they're going to say, "What are they doing
playing Christmas songs in July?"
So tell Luann to line us up with around December for next
yeah,
year on this one. Well, this is WPCA Radio, and you're listening to Trigger Happy Memories. We're in Amory, Wisconsin. If you're just tuning in, we got a very special guest. We got Rick Shefchek with us tonight, and he was the writer of a book that I really thoroughly enjoyed, The Bird is the Word. And
Everybody's heard about
everybody's
The Bird.
I'm sorry, yep. Yeah. And
it gets called The Bird is the Word as often as it gets called by its regular title.
But it just took this area by storm, and especially musicians. Rick Stenner, who was listening tonight, I hope. Rick, I hope you're feeling better. We're thinking about you. But he read it and just loved it. He just... he's a musician like us that he got caught up in all these bands. But I want to talk about another band that I thought was so interesting, the Gestures from Mankato. They had the song Run, Run, Run. Can you share a little bit of that story with us, Rick?
Sure. The Gestures actually were called the Jesters, but there were lots of bands around the country that were using that name.
With a J,
the Jesters. They were known as that for at least a couple of years down in Mankato. And then Dale Menton, who was a member of the band, wrote a song called Run, 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 and they sent a tape up to the Twin Cities to Is it Jim Madison?
I mean, Jim Madison, yeah. Yep.
Who was sort of the country scout for Soma Records. And he liked it and thought that there was some potential there. And, you know, Jim Madison was more of a country western guy, but brought the gestures or the jesters into the studio. They laid down a version of it, and it was good, but it seemed to be missing something. So they brought in Lou Riegert, who was the DJ on KDWB, top 40 jock, and he listened to it, and he thought that it was lacking just one thing. He recommended to Bruce Watterson, the drummer, that he double-timed the bass drum on the Run, Run, Run break, where there was harmony, but basically the band wasn't playing. That created a dynamic sound that just pushed the record over the top. It was already really good, but I think that made it great. So they were all set to go with that. They even had some copies starting to be pressed as the jesters doing Run, Run, Run. And then at the last second, they were contacted by somebody that said there's a band in Florida that's got a record out. They're called the Jesters, and you can't use that name. So they had to decide real quick what they were going to do, and they finally decided just to change one, change the J to a G and, sure. and spell Jesters as Gestures. Gus Dewey, the guitar player for the band, was afraid that that would be interpreted to mean obscene gestures. But they thought it over and decided, no, we could probably get away with
musicians
it.
Musicians' mind.
Yeah. And, you know, Dale Menton wrote a batch of really good songs. Of all the bands in the Twin Cities, that was the one that really had an in-house songwriter that was capable of giving them sustained
sure.
material. Unfortunately, Dale really disliked going out on the road. They went out to Washington State on their first the promo tour to back the record, and one of the places they went to was not expecting them because it was apparently a different city that they were supposed to be in. Another place they went to, they went over very well, but the kid said, you know, we love the song, but we can't buy it. It's not available anywhere.
Yeah, they didn't have any records to sell.
No record, no product. So it just got really frustrating, and Dale didn't last with the group much longer, but he stayed in music. He ended up actually owning K-Bank Studio in a later version
of
it in the 70s.
Oh.
Did a lot of songwriting, production work, still involved in music to this day, and played intermittently with a couple of other bands, but it was always Dale's intention to stay in the studio and work at it from that end. He just didn't enjoy the live performing part of it.
In your book too, you talk about they were using one of the mother's van. It was a little Chevy van with a 6-cylinder, and it was cold in the van, and they would struggle with this thing. And there were some hostile crowds that they played in front of. And then, like you said, they want to buy your record. Well, we don't have any. We'll have them in 2 weeks. People are throwing money at them, and we don't have a record to sell you.
And you know, the trash man told me that they experienced the same thing. You'd think that the biggest act at Soma Records would at least have product out there when they cut new material, but distribution was always a problem for Soma. And it got to the point where the Heilitzer brothers, by 67, I think it was, decided to sell out. It was just... you know, the business had gotten way more sophisticated. These guys were rack jobbers who had sort of grown up supplying product to department stores in the 50s and really got into record label ownership almost by accident. And the local bands, the ones with real talent, you know, look at the Underbeats in particular, realized by 67, 68, you just weren't going to make it out of the Twin Cities. So they set their sights on moving to Los Angeles, and they did, changed their name to Gypsy, and they had quite a bit of success that way.
Yes, and I do remember in the book, too, that the Everly Brothers were playing in town at the same time that the Jesters were, and they were actually paid $500 to not play. So the Everly Brothers, they were worried that they might take some of the audience away from the Everly's.
Yeah, they were playing at the Cato Ballroom, and the Gestures were booked in another facility. And the promoter of the Everly Brothers show realized that the Gestures were just going to draw too many fans away from their show, so they brought them in and actually had them open for the Everly Brothers.
Sure, they were the front, yeah. That's, and it was cool. That song, it was like number three or number five on the East Coast.
Yeah, that was a kind of an interesting thing to research, and you know, you'll never pin it down, and I think a lot of musicians have gone back and tried to find out how many copies did we really sell? How popular were we? Because the reporting was always very haphazard, you know, at least, you know what, I was going to say at least with the local labels, but I think that you could probably say the same thing for even the major labels, that the artists never really got the true story.
Sure.
There's one website that I've been to that will show you how certain records did in individual markets, and the Gestures were top 10 in a lot of markets around the United States.
Sure, yes. Well, we're going to do some more music. You want to do that someday soon?
Yeah, let me
did
just...
Did you want to retune there quickly?
I think I'm pretty close here. Yeah, I just got to get this one.
Just the A, maybe? Ladies and gentlemen, this is live radio. If we're out of tune, we stop and we tune up. So that's okay.
Yeah, I think we can do this.
And you're going to do that. Will you go to the...
Sure, we can do that.
Eddie's going to kick it off on the steel, so...
Good.
Yeah.
I am just a young man, my age is 21. I come from down in southern Colorado, just out of the service, and I'm looking for my fun someday soon. She's going with me someday soon. Her parents cannot stand me, 'cause I ride the rodeo. Her father says that I will leave her crying. She would follow me right down the toughest road to hoe. Someday soon, she's going with me someday soon. And when I come to call, her pa ain't got a good word to say. Guess it's 'cause he is just as wild in the younger days. So blow, you old blue northern, blow my love to her. I'm driving in tonight from California. I love that damned old rodeo as much as I love her. Someday soon, she's going with me someday soon. I come to call, her pa ain't got a word to say. Guess it's 'cause he was just as wild in his younger days. So blow, you old blue northern, blow me back to her. I'm driving in tonight from California. I love that damned old rodeo as much as I love her. someday soon. She's going with me someday soon. Someday soon. She's going with me someday soon.
That's Rick Shefchek singing that. I love that song.
Thank you. I think most people are familiar with the Judy Collins version of it from 69 or so, I think it was. And that's the first time I had heard it. And I just loved that song. I've always loved it. But it was written by Ian Tyson of Ian and Sylvia. And there are versions that use both pronouns, both the he and the she, depending on who's singing it. The version I did was actually done by the Kingston Trio when John Stewart was a member of the Kingston Trio, and he sang the you know, from the male perspective. So I thought, let's shake it up a little bit.
Well, yeah, Mo Bandy did this song too.
I haven't heard his version of it, but I heard he did it.
Very, very nice.
Don't forget Gay Magnifici did
it. And Gay did it. That's right.
How could you forget?
She's the singer in our group, and she recorded that and. Yes. I'm going to see if we can. We're having so much fun talking here. I got a new CD that I put together recently of songs that I wrote through what we recorded through the years.
Yeah, right, buddy.
And Eddie, I'll tell you what, this CD is taking off like crazy. Right now, it's doing so well on the charts, it's up to number 2.
At your house?
At my house.
At
yes.
your house.
Yeah, it's just doing, yep.
I got to ask, what's number 1?
Elvira. The kids play it all the time. I do, too. I love that song. But anyhow, this is number 2. But this is a song that Dan Wohl and I wrote together, and it's a little bit of an obscure song from the typical stuff that we write, but we'll see if we can play this. See if she'll come up there, Bob. Funny how that lingers after all these years. And I never told you what you meant to me, and how your memory still clings to me. Staring out the window in the autumn of the year, the leaves slowly drift away while your memory is still here. Haunted for years, wondering how you are, wishing somehow you wouldn't be so far. Do 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 do. Foolish daydreams, time after time, wishing I told you how I feel inside, lost in fantasy. Tried to hide my tears as I quickly turned away, but I haven't seen her in such a long time. So why do I feel so empty inside? Saw her dad on Sunday, walking all alone. I stopped to say I'm sorry, offered a ride home. Hopeless daydreams now at an end. Autumn leaves still blow in the wind. Do-do-do-do-do. 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 Oh, there's a song that Dan Wohl and I wrote together. Dan was our superintendent at our school for a number of years, and we got to be friends, and he'd come up to my sign shop, and we'd play guitar, and he started playing with these chords, and he said, can you write some lyrics to this? And we toyed around with it, and it was a nice, fun project for us.
I have to say, I really like that song.
Well, thank you.
It's got a sort of an old school vibe to it. I'm hearing sort of like Brian Hyland, Bobby Goldsboro, that kind of thing.
Sure.
It's really in a nice spot for me. I like
that. Yeah, well, thank you. And I gave you a CD. It's on that CD too.
Glad to hear that. Thanks.
Yes. We're going to have to say goodnight here pretty quick. I just want to say hello to some folks and thank them for listening. Gary McIntyre is out there listening. And I think Wings Callahan might be listening. And Shirley Halliburton from Woodbury, she was at your birthday party too, Eddie. Edna Bjorkman. And she read your articles many times in the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Scott Nash. Scott, thanks for playing at Deerfield with me here last week. My mother and Jim out in Arizona. Heather in Shakopee is listening, I hope. Your neighbors there, Eddie, Al, and
Alan Ann Jorgensen.
I talked to them at your birthday party, and they said they listen to this every week, and they put the radio in a certain spot in the house.
Oh, so they can get the station.
Yep, and they just don't touch it, don't move, just and they tune it. So thank you so much, Alan Ann. It was Sam Bolton might be listening out there. Rick and Rosie Stinner. Rick, we're praying for you to get better. Rick, get that back healed up. My wife, Debbie.
Putz. My wife, Barbara, maybe listening.
Sure, well, good.
If she could take my singing.
Well, the good thing about this, she could turn you off if she wants to. Or turn
right.
you down, right?
Bill at home, Ganassi. She just has to close the door.
So, Eddie, you got anybody you want to say hello to quick?
Greg Lane's listening tonight, and a lot of the regulars. I do got to say one quick thing. I got a call from Ron Holly, my friend. Years ago, I helped play some steel for this guy, John Kerhiwitz, and he just passed away, unfortunately.
Did.
He helped write a song for the Oak Ridge Boys.
Yep.
That's going to take a lot of river.
Yes.
And but we lost John Kerhiwitz this week.
Oh, so that's too bad.
We're not for them.
So. And we recorded one of his songs too. That was
Smokey Joe's on a Monday
night. Yes, good song. Yes. You want anybody else besides your wife? You want to say hello to?
I don't think anybody else is listening. At least nobody I know.
Yes. Well, we're going to have to say goodnight here. I just want to thank you so much, Rick, for coming out and doing this. We're winding down. We got a couple of minutes, maybe. Yeah, okay. Just real briefly, we talked about the castaways. It's too long a story. We can't do it in 2 minutes, but interesting story with those guys. Can you condense it?
Yeah, well, they had a number one record in the Twin Cities, and they didn't realize how successful they were elsewhere until their manager showed them that they were top 10 in Los Angeles, and he booked them on a trip out there instead of their next Saturday's gig in International Falls. Mm. But while they were preparing to go out, they got into a fight on stage, two of the members, and it carried over to the next day, and so they kicked that their bass player out of the band, and they had to shuffle their instruments. But they were going out to do a bunch of lip sync performances on TV shows in Los Angeles, and the guy that kicked out of the band was the lead singer on Liar Liar, so they had to learn to somebody else had to lip sync his part. And of course he was watching it on TV and thinking, this isn't right, man. So he put together his own version of the Castaways, and they started gigging around the country at the same time, and they ended up meeting on a TV show in Pittsburgh when there was a confusion about which version of the Castaways was supposed to be there. They both showed up.
So, yeah, he had put his own band together as
well.
He did,
so, okay. Yes.
Well, that's our cue. We got to wrap it up, but we hope everybody enjoyed the show. I certainly enjoyed it a whole lot. And
thanks to everybody that's listening.
Yes, you bet. And we'll be back. We're here every week. At once a month, we've got the live show, so we'll have a guest coming up again. And in between weeks, they replay our shows. So tune in and have a good Christmas, everybody. Merry Christmas. So.